Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we are off and running here on our Thursday, June 5th, 2025 edition.
I thought you were talking about the Belmont Stakes there for a second.
That's coming up, isn't it?
Yes, Saturday? It is. Yeah. Yes, it is.
We'll see if we have a Triple Crown winner. Never know. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, where we have five radio stations operating here under one location. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted live news and talk. We're in our 15th year with radio work on their Buckmaster radio program, 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We've got our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts available for you at buckmastershow.com, where we do our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing a few of those today. The Buckmaster Show live line is all fired up and ready to go, presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Let's go now on the live line in our conversation, monthly conversation, with longtime automotive dealer and most recently, it's been a few years, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, a Republican, the lone Republican on the five-member board of the Pima County Supervisors, Supervisor Christie, a Republican, who is now in his third four-year term on the board. Supervisor, how are you? Hello. Is he there?
I'm right here. Beg your pardon.
Oh, no problem.
I was just trying to tabulate with your 37 years in broadcasting.
Well,
I'm entering halfway through my ninth term, my ninth year, I should say, as supervisor. And I'm trying to figure out how many times I've had the opportunity you've given me to be on your show over those years.
Well,
it's been a long, long time and a lot of shows.
Yeah, we've done a lot of shows together. And it's 37 years just in Tucson. Chicago was my hometown and where it all started for me as an intern at WIND, appropriate name for a radio station in the Windy City. And that was back in the summer of 67. So it's been a great ride, and we continue to do the program every day because we feel, that I learned something every day, and that's why we do it. And we're delighted to bring this service to the listeners in Tucson. Your district, of course, includes Mount Lemmon. I'm just curious. We had about a half an inch of rain in the lower foothills at the Buckmaster Bungalow. What kind of numbers did they have from that lovely rain on Sunday night?
Well, I'm glad to say a little bit over an inch.
Wow.
And that's significant up there this time of year, particularly given the conditions prior to the rain. So that's a very positive and pleasing number to record, and I think we're going to be getting more of it. So that's encouraging, especially in this particular time of year, as we all know, is very vulnerable to the wildfires.
Yeah, let's hope it may protect us or stave off any kind of fire danger until we get into the monsoon here in about 3 weeks. It was a big day for the Pima County Board of Supervisors as you and your colleagues decided to make a decision on moving the downtown Joel D. Valdez Main Library, move it across the street to the former Wells Fargo building on North Stone Avenue. What is your take on this, Supervisor Christie?
Well, there's a number of issues surrounding a number of things that are related that are problematic to me, and I'll try and touch on them as briefly as I can. I think first and foremost is obviously the usage of the Joel D. Valdez Main Library. Every indication that I've looked at and every report that I've seen from people that have been very close to the operation of the library in the downtown center there, they've all said unanimously that the use of that library has dropped dramatically over the last few years, and that there is very little of the need for it, apparently, because there's so little use of it. Unfortunately, it has gone through the deferred maintenance issue that we're so familiar with in the city of Tucson and Pima County, that the costs to rehabilitate it to any working or safe condition are just astronomical. Secondly, unfortunately, as in many downtowns, and particularly Tucson, it's become a hub for individuals who are using that facility for not its original intended purpose. It's become a congregate spot for folks who are suffering from all sorts of maladies, mental illness, drug addiction, homelessness, and it's kind of a hub for that kind of activity. And this leads to issues, as you know, that could put people into vulnerable positions, particularly you really don't want to bring your kids into a situation where you have folks that are in going through detox or through drug addiction or utilizing drugs at the that particular time or location. So yeah, I have to kind of temper the whole issue of the libraries and revisit, is this the type of a situation where we want to have continued in downtown Tucson in that particular location? The other thing that is problematic, or the second thing I should say, is that Pima County cannot stop itself from being in the property acquiring business, and they love to buy properties. And they're buying what I think is a very significant, beautiful, historic building in downtown Tucson, built in the late 50s, indicative of so many architectural designs that are so prevalent in our region. I would just hate to see the same type of degradation to that particular building that happened to the Valdez Library. It certainly is something that is a real treasure to our region. And here's yet another property that Pima County wants to take off the tax rolls and own and not generate any tax revenue. And I would think it would be much better than having Pima County compete with the private sector and the development industry by allowing them to find some sort of really fabulous use, like the Valley Bank, the old Valley Bank building they did. I think it is very sad that they're not really exploring private sector use for that building so it can generate tax revenue. The third thing is there are other properties that Pima County owns now. I wish they didn't, but they do. For one is 97 East Congress, which was the old Southern New Hampshire University building. They were inhabiting that, renting that from the county and the city for just a few months, and then that whole enterprise folded and left, and it did house some temporary Pima County workers that are going to be moving back to a county building after it's being rehabilitated. So it's empty and vacant. And this at Tuesday's meeting, we were hearing that the real tipping point to buy the Wells Fargo building was because of the parking garages. Well, 97 East Congress is roughly the same square footage. It's roughly the same style of building. And right adjacent to it, virtually on the same block, are two very large parking garages. So that argument that the Wells Fargo building has these parking garages that really cinched the tipping point deal for the county to buy it don't hold water when you have the same kind of parking facilities and access right next to a empty building that is owned by the county. So I think they made a very costly mistake, $6.2 million to buy the Wells Fargo, $29 million to rehabilitate it, and then we have to worry about declining usage of such facilities, as we've seen with the Valdez Library. From my standpoint, and I just have to hearken back to looking at it from a business perspective, it doesn't make sense to me.
Would you be comfortable walking away from a downtown library? Would you be comfortable just walking away from, because that is city-owned property, the Valdez property, just let the county walk away and not have a downtown operation? Would you be comfortable with that?
I certainly would. And I think the usage and the proper usage of our library facilities is certainly not downtown, and it's certainly questionable in many of the city locations, but in the outer regions, they're very well attended and very well used, and I don't see the need or the necessity to have such an edifice in downtown Tucson when no one's using it. So to answer your question again directly, yes, I would be very comfortable with the county just walking away from that library and that facility and letting the city deal with it.
All right, coming up next with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, should county government, should government be involved in the whole issue of affording providing affordable housing? Steve Christie sticks around for segment two right after this.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, 3384 East River Road. The sale continues. Still some great items, up to 50% off on selected merchandise at the Zocalo Village arm of the Green Things 13-acre site. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're doing, segment 1, 2, and 3 by phone today, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our friend Sean and the gang over there do a great job. Steve Christie is the lone Republican on the 5-member board of the Pima County Supervisors. He is in his third four-year term, and he is with us on the live line. And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Supervisor Christie, have you ever voted in the affirmative on a new Pima County budget?
I never have, and I certainly am not going to be on this one. There's always seems to be 4-1, 4-1, 4-1 in most of these issues, you are correct.
What about this one?
This particular budget, I have absolutely no intention of voting in favor of it. The way it's presented at this particular point, there are numerous issues that I have with it. It seems to be the same ones I've had with the past budgets, particularly when it comes to property taxes.
Is it government's responsibility to provide so-called affordable housing in our county?
It's not the county government's responsibility. There's the issue of any kind of housing should be in the city, because that's where the housing issues really are. The unincorporated areas of Pima County don't have the housing issues that are being portrayed by my colleagues. Those are mostly city issues. We might have some in some outlying rural areas, but certainly not to the extent that the metropolitan city of Tucson has. So I don't believe it's the county's responsibility. And I don't believe that, first of all, I have an issue with affordable housing as the title of this whole thing. You and I, maybe, I shouldn't speak for you, but I would always assume that affordable housing referred to being able to purchase a single dwelling family home,
right,
and pay a mortgage to a private lender and work your way up by paying the mortgage monthly and maintaining the property to the point where you might be able to buy a bigger or newer
mm-hmm.
home
mm-hmm.
or pay off the mortgage on that existing unit and have the equity provide maybe a nest egg or any kind of a financial opportunity in people's later years. This affordable housing has nothing to do with that. The affordable housing that my colleagues are referring to are nothing more than taxpayer, public subsidized rental of rental units that have been also subsidized mostly for out-of-state developers to provide rental units for people who will be subsidized by taxpayers to inhabit them.
Hmm.
It's a whole different area than what I think the traditional term affordable housing is being used upon. So what's being proposed is that our property taxes, which are paid by those folks who have worked for years to pay off a mortgage, who have bought and maintained and disciplined themselves to own a home, are now, after the home is paid off, are really being renters of Pima County, because even though their mortgage is paid off, they still have to pay property taxes. And if they don't pay their property taxes, the county can take their home away. So the people who have paid their mortgages and have been paying the property taxes on those homes are now being told that their property taxes are going to be raised in order to pay for public subsidized public housing with their property tax money that's going to go to out-of-state developers to incentivize them to build rental units that will be inhabited by folks who will be given rent subsidies. It's nothing more than public housing. It's not, quote-unquote, affordable housing.
What else is driving these property taxes up in this budget?
Well, apparently there's some issues about services that the county administrator feels that a property tax increase will be justified. Again, this is another attempt to thwart the idea that the county is not either not raising property taxes or not raising them by very much. And then people look at their tax bill and they, you know, their jaws drop to the floor because they see a huge increase in their property taxes. Well, what happens is certainly the property tax rate is being set by the Board of Supervisors. We set that rate, but the assessor, of course, has the valuations of all of the properties in Pima County that are subject to taxes, and those properties have increased in value. So when the increase in value is matched with the property tax rate set by the Board of Supervisors, you have more property taxes you have to pay. There is a way to make it what we call revenue neutral by lowering the property tax to be commensurate with the increase and to offset the increase in the valuation. There's been no effect to do that. There's been no discussion to do that, just like there's been no discussion of raising property taxes to pay for public housing. My colleagues really have been extremely anxious to get this passed and get this through. And I think they feel that they need to do it because they know that if it was put out to a public hearing or a public listening session or dialogue with in public town hall meetings about raising property taxes to pay for public housing, or even to put it on the ballot, that it would not hold the light of day, that the taxpayers would be absolutely furious that their property tax dollars was going to subsidize public housing. And that's why my colleagues are in such a mad rush to get this thing through. And I think it's a real injustice to the people that are paying for this scheme that my colleagues want to push forward. And it's a real injustice to them because they don't have an opportunity to look at the details or have a say in the matter.
Do you think you will hear from your constituents when they get their first property tax bill?
Well, I'm already hearing from them just from the issues that we've been discussing in the Board of Supervisors meeting. But yeah, I can't blame them, and they have to look at every line item in that tax bill, because it's not just the primary property tax, it's all the districts, the library district, the flood control district, the fire districts, the school districts. Look at every one of them. There's only a handful that the county Board of Supervisors has control over, and there's a lot more issues involved. And one of the other issues is they're going to see, speaking of libraries, is that their library district taxes are going to be going up as well to pay for the what they call PEEPS, the primary pre-education program. That money is going to be the money for that program is coming out of the library district, and in order to pay for it, the library district taxes have to be raised. So there's several issues of taxes being raised that people may not be aware of. As a matter of fact, I'm certain that most people in Pima County aren't aware of them until they get their tax bill, and that's when my phone rings off the hook.
All right. In the remaining 3 minutes, are you losing all faith in that voters will get a chance to vote on a 20-year regional plan, transportation plan known as RTA Next?
In order for that to happen, they have to come up. The RTA PAG board has to come up with a plan. Is that how you're referring to this, or
yes,
setting the stage on it?
Yes.
Yeah, the sands of time are dwindling down quickly on this issue. I think they've got till, what is it, July or August?
I think August. Yes.
They have to have a plan ready to present to the voters, and they've been bogged down. The PAG RTA board, Pima Association governance, and the Regional Transportation Authority. Those boards, which happen to be the same, but both entities have yet to come up with a plan because they've been bogged down with some internal issues. And I'm very pessimistic about it. And I blame the city of Tucson for pulling the rug out from under this inappropriately and unjustifiably. So let's hope that there might be some thread of a future brightness that can be translated into a plan by the time that they can in order to get it on the ballot. So this particular point, I am pessimistic.
And let me remind our listeners, if they've been listeners to this show for a long time, and you've been on the program for a long time, years ago, 2, maybe 3 years ago, you warned that the city of Tucson was sabotaging another 20-year renewal for this program, the RTA program.
Yes, I have, and I've been consistent in that, and I think I would welcome me being proven wrong on this issue that they can't come. I have a deep faith and belief in the RTA program and its success and its efficacy and what it's done for our transportation infrastructure needs. And I also have faith in the CEO of RTA and PEG, Mr. Mogimi. He has the legacy and the historic connections, and he follows the rules. He's passed audit after audit. He may be in a situation because of his job description where he has to tell people what they do not want to hear, mm-hmm. or he has to be the one to say no. But by and all, he has upheld his job. He has upheld his performance, and the attacks that have been made on him by individuals on the PAG board, I think is completely unjust and unfair. And why in the world would anybody want to subterfuge and pull the rug out from under a very successful plan?
Yeah.
And the only reasonable plan that we have due to the fact that they just maybe not like somebody.
All right. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. Oh, by the way, I didn't tell you, I love being supervisor.
Really stop the presses on that one. There's the headline. We'll be right back.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. When things heat up in Tucson, it sure makes my job easier when I promote Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. And you may be saying, well, why is that, Bill? Well, look at the elevation over in Silver City. That's about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, depending on where you are there in that particular region. You know, we're looking at temperatures in the 80s for the next 7 days. Really great forecast, perfect for doing some hiking. On the Gila National Wilderness is the next door neighbor to Silver City. Only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. When we do our telephone interviews in segment 1, 2, and 3 are all via the telephone. The Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the Live Line is Dr. David Levy from his observatory in Vail, Arizona. Dr. Levy is the founder of the National Sharing the Sky Foundation. Of course, he's one of the most famous comet discoverers in history, 23 notches on his belt in that particular area. And he's the former science editor of Parade Magazine. He joins us now. Dr. Levy, I presume, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well.
Yes.
And I'm still searching for comets. In fact, I was searching only last night.
David, would you hold your phone a little bit closer to you? We're having trouble hearing you.
I was searching just last night, as I was trying to say.
And any luck?
No, but it's the search that's so important that counts. If I had spent my entire life searching without any discoveries at all, it would still be worth it because I get so much out of it, and it's right now my primary joy in life.
I understand we've got 3 comets in a row.
Yeah, we got really 3 really beauties that happened, one right after the other. Last fall, we had Comet Tsushin-Shan Atlas, and I could just look outside, stand outside, sit down, and look up in the western sky and see this beautiful comet with the tail going up halfway to the zenith of the sky. And then in January, there was a southern sky comet Atlas, which I did not expect that I would see. But one night, I saw a cirrus clouds, and then behind the cirrus, I could see something else that looked a little different, and it was the tail of Comet Atlas coming right out of the southern sky. And then in early April, Comet Swan that I was able to see from right here. So 3 in a row to see. I've now seen 237 comets, Bill.
Did you say 237 comets in your lifetime?
That's what I said. You heard me.
Wow. And all of them with telescopes, or a couple of them maybe without telescopes, right?
Yeah, a couple without, but I did catch them all with telescopes.
Generally, do you need a telescope?
If you're going to search for comets, you do need a telescope of one sort or another. It doesn't have to be a big one. In fact, the one that I use the most is a 6-inch diameter telescope that covers a wide field of sky. And it's kind of like that famous poem that Leslie Pelcher wrote about, The Mountain and the Squirrel. And the mountain says to the squirrel, I can carry forests on my back. And the squirrel says, yes, but can you crack a nut? And Pelcher went on to say that he likes to think of his telescopes saying that I can see 16 magnitude stars. And then the little telescope says, yes, but can you catch a comet?
All right, let's have the Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show.
Well, today's quotation is in honor of Fred Espenat, Mr. Eclipse, who passed away on Sunday. And the quote is from Macbeth, and it's about eclipses. And I did not realize until someone called it to my attention a number of years ago. It's right after Macbeth kills Duncan and everyone's gossiping out. And the Thane of Ross and an old man are talking. And the old man says, "By the clock, 'tis day, and yet dark night strangles the traveling lamp. Is it the night's predominance or the day's shame that darkness does the face of earth and tomb when living light should kiss it?"
Very nice.
Thank you.
Dr. David Levy, always a pleasure. Thank you, David.
Thank you. See you next month.
All right. Dr. David Levy on The Buckmaster Show. The counselor is in the house, Don Luce. The Buckmaster Show attorney is next as we continue on The Buckmaster Show. Quick promo for tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview. Former Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek will be talking about his role as head of the Pima Animal Care Center. Former Councilman Kasacek took over that role in January. We talked to him at that time, haven't checked in with him now several months later. We'll see how it's going over there. We'll have that for you along with my co-media host on Friday. Paul Ingram will be here from TucsonSentinel.com. Let's take a break then. Attorney Don Luce. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Always a pleasure to welcome to the program Don Luce of the Luce Law Group. Don has a beautiful office here in Tucson, also an office up in Phoenix. I have not been to the Phoenix office, but I assume it's also beautiful because Don's got good taste. Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, and his other book, very popular book, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, so popular that they're in their second printing, and it wouldn't surprise me if there was actually a third printing down the road. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you.
An appeals court now ruling saying the city of Tucson can be held liable in a lawsuit that was filed by residents of a North Side neighborhood who claim Tucson's inaction against a homeless camp creates a public nuisance. This, Don, reverses a lower court ruling.
Correct. So to provide some context for this ruling, we have to understand that the problem is statewide. There was a similar situation in Phoenix involving an area known as the Zone, where hundreds, if not thousands, of people were essentially camping on public property. Mm-hmm. The business owners in that area brought a lawsuit in Phoenix, Maricopa County, mm-hmm. contending that the city was liable for failing to abate what is called a public nuisance. The city, of course, defended itself, saying it had no responsibility for those people who were on its property. The court in Phoenix disagreed with the city and ordered the city to clean up that area by a date certain. Mm-hmm. The same lawyers who represented the plaintiffs in the Maricopa County lawsuit filed a similar lawsuit in Pima County. Okay, different county, different judges, sometimes different views on things. And even though the facts were very similar and the arguments were essentially the same, that the city has an obligation to abate a nuisance on public land, the trial court in Pima County ruled in favor of the city and mm-hmm. said the city does not have any liability for cleaning up what essentially in this case was a portion of a wash that the city owned. Mm-hmm. The plaintiffs appealed the decision, and just recently, May 29th, the Court of Appeals here in Tucson disagreed with the trial court, reversed the trial court's decision, and ordered the trial court to enter an injunction in favor of the plaintiffs, ordering the city to abate the nuisance. So I think what we can expect to see is the city of Tucson taking steps to basically remove whoever is camping in the Navajo Wash adjacent to the Hendrick Acres neighborhood, and then clean up whatever needs to be cleaned and ensure that that public encampment doesn't return, because this particular area has been sort of a hot point or an issue since 2019. The city has from time to time attempted to remove the people who were camping in the wash, only to find that after they remove the people, the same people would either come back or new people would come in and set up a camp. And so the property owners, representatives of the property owners filed suit saying, look, this is affecting us. We live here. We take great pride in our neighborhood. We consider this wash to be a place where we expect to be able to enjoy the natural mm-hmm. beauty of it. And
take a walk or walk the dog or whatever.
Yeah. Right? Well, more than that, because there were so many individuals in the wash that it was creating public health problems.
Sure.
So they filed a lawsuit, and the Court of Appeals, as I mentioned, just found in their favor and ordered the trial court to essentially force the city to take care of the situation. And that is consistent with the ruling that was made in Phoenix about a year ago involving very, very similar issues. So property owners who are faced with a situation where they're being affected by a public nuisance, I think now have a clear remedy. And I think the city based upon this ruling, and I'm just speculating, but I think it may be more responsive to those kinds of complaints now that the Court of Appeals has found against it on a very similar issue. But this is also on the coattails of Prop 312, which was passed by Arizona voters in November of last year. Prop 312 allows Arizona property owners to seek tax reimbursement for non-enforcement of public nuisance laws. Very similar concept, because both involve government units that are refusing or failing to abate public nuisances. In the case of the Court of Appeals decision, which we just talked about, the plaintiffs were entitled to injunctive relief, which is an order requiring the city to take action. In the case of Proposition 312, this allows a property owner to seek reimbursement of reasonable expenses relating to that property owner's mitigation of the effects of a public nuisance that the jurisdiction refuses to address, up to the amount of the tax that was paid the preceding year. So if you paid $5,000 in property tax and you had $5,000 in expenses relating to an abatement of a public nuisance that the city refused to address, you could apply for a refund up to $5,000 of your reasonable expenses. And so this is yet another avenue that property owners have to address what I think the voters have spoken about in terms of being a statewide issue.
Has anyone applied, do you know, or taken advantage of that?
No, I don't know that. And again,
and it gets subjective, doesn't it?
Well, the statute does require that the expenses be documented, and it also requires that the expenses be reasonable, and also requires that the expenses be incurred with respect to that owner's property. Okay, so those are the conditions that the property owner has to meet in order to apply for reimbursement. But again, if you paid $5,000 in property tax in 2024, you would be eligible potentially to request reimbursement for up to $5,000 to mitigate the effects of a public nuisance that the city refuses to address.
Going back to the zone in Phoenix, did the city of Phoenix then clean up the zone?
It did, yeah. And that was an interesting case because the zone existed for years.
Okay.
Much like what's been happening in the Navajo Wash. I mean, 2019 is 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So these are year over year problems that the nearby property owners felt needed to be addressed. The city of Phoenix initially refused, arguing that it wasn't liable for, you know, the conditions that were existing, claiming that the plaintiffs didn't have standing to bring the lawsuit, similar to what the city of Tucson did in this case. But the courts in both instances ruled that if the city permits a public nuisance to exist on its property, then the city can be liable for the consequences of that nuisance. And in both cases, it involved property owners who were near the case of the zone, near that area where literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people were living on a permanent basis. In the Navajo Wash, it was fewer people, but it was still a problem for the residents of Hendrick Acres because they live there.
Right.
And they're living with this issue that they felt the city should have taken care of, and they won. They won.
Could the city of Tucson go all the way to the state Supreme Court to appeal this?
So the way.
And I'm wondering why Phoenix didn't choose that route, but who knows?
The way our state court system is set up, the Court of Appeals is the doors are open to anybody. If you go to a trial and you lose, you have an automatic appeal. The Court of Appeals can't say, no, we're not going to consider the case. Mm-hmm. They have to. If you timely file a notice of appeal, mm-hmm. They have to look at the issues. Mm-hmm. Now, you may lose, but mm-hmm. they have to look at it. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court is different. Only certain cases are heard by the court, and they pretty much determine which cases get heard. And it generally has to be an issue of statewide importance. Now, this probably mm-hmm. qualifies mm-hmm. on that ground, but it also has to be an issue that affects a large number of residents. I don't get the sense, and I could be wrong on this, mm-hmm. obviously, but I don't get the sense that these cases are the type of cases that the Supreme Court of our state mm-hmm. is probably going to accept jurisdiction mm-hmm. over. I might be wrong on that, but just my feeling.
Well, I always learn something every time with you, Don Luce. I learned that, first of all, the state Supreme Court can pick and choose pretty much then what they accept. In the appeals court, it's a different story.
That's right. In most instances, litigants do not have the right to have their cases heard by the Arizona Supreme Court. The Arizona Supreme Court has the ability, like the U.S. Supreme Court, to deny certiorari on various cases. And if they deny petition, then that's usually the end of the road for almost everyone.
Let's see if we can carve out a couple of minutes here about this. And I believe it's now gone to the governor's desk. Lawmakers gave final approval just yesterday to a controversial measure, Don Luce, that would allow students and parents to actually sue teachers personally over what they contend are anti-Semitic statements and actions in the classroom.
Right. So before we get into the substance of the bill, which is House Bill 2867, I want to note that this essentially was passed along party lines. Very few Democrats in the House supported it, and I don't believe that any Democrats in the Senate supported it. So I'm a bit skeptical that the governor is going to sign it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could be wrong, but my sense is that because it was passed along party lines, and the party that passed it isn't the same party that the governor belongs to, mm-hmm. She may refuse to sign it. But it's an interesting bill nonetheless, because what it does is it opens the courthouse doors, as you said, mm-hmm. to students and students 18 or over to actually bring a lawsuit against the school and the teacher if they believe that the environment in which they were learning was hostile or anti-Semitic comments were made during the teaching process. With regard to students who are under the age of 18, the bill would allow their parents to file a lawsuit against the teacher and or the institution on the student's behalf. In addition, there are provisions in this bill that not only provide for injunctive relief, in other words, the student, the hypothetical student who files a lawsuit against his or her teacher could get an order requiring that practice stop, but also there's a provision in the bill for damages and attorney's fees. Mm. So again, we'll wait and see what happens to the bill, but it was sent to the governor yesterday, and it is on the governor's desk for consideration.
If it were to pass, it might be one more reason why teachers are leaving the classroom.
If
the governor signs that,
it would have a major impact.
It really would. All right, Don Luce of Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Thanks, Don. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure.
We will talk with you the first week of July already. Where has 2025 gone? All right, on behalf of Attorney Don Luce and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.